Hi, and welcome to this audio edition of Polygamy, What Love Is This? With host Doris Hansen. On this program, we discuss polygamy and Mormon fundamentalism from a biblical Christian perspective. We talk about the history of polygamy, its modern-day fruit, share stories from people who have escaped polygamy, and talk about current events related to polygamy. You can learn more about the video edition of this program at whatloveisthis.tv. And now, here's Doris.
Welcome to our show tonight, Polygamy, What Love Is This? I'm your host, Doris Hansen, and it's a great privilege to be here and to be invited into your homes tonight. I was born and raised in the Kingston Polygamy Group, and of course I was threatened and lectured almost from the cradle that polygamy was the only way that we could please God. But I found out differently later, much to my amazement and to my joy, and of course we want to share with our viewers all that we've learned about the truth about polygamy. We are doing a show live tonight from the TV20 studios in Salt Lake City, Utah, and this is a telephone call-in program. Our phone number is 801-973-TV20, 801-973-8820. You might want to write that number down. We'll be opening up the phone lines and invite your phone calls a little bit later in the show. And if you know anyone that lives in the Boise, Idaho, Nampa area, you might tell them that they can watch our show on Sunday afternoons up there on KCLP Channel 18 on Sunday afternoons from 4 until 5 p.m. And of course, all of our shows can be watched on the internet on streaming video. Our website is whatloveisthis.tv. And you can watch all of our shows there. People will ask, maybe they would like to get a hold of a show that we've done in the past, or they want to know how they can get one. You can also order any show that we've done in the past off of our website, whatloveisthis.tv, as well. And of course, from there, you can link to various pages of information. You can find out about our Life After Polygamy support group. We meet once a month. Our next meeting is October 25th at 6:30. If your life has been touched by polygamy in any way, if your neighbor's a polygamist and you want to know more about it, or if the guy across the street or your great-grandmother was, we are there to talk about these things, and you're certainly welcome to come. It's a non-confrontational, quiet group. We have some very good meetings. So if you're interested in the support group, please contact us and we'll give you the information about it. You can also learn from our website how to receive our resources, how to receive free the DVD, Lifting the Veil of Polygamy, as well as the book, Bible Study, Is Polygamy Biblical? And another page, if you are from a Mormon-based background at all, now there's over 200 splinter groups from the original Mormon church, and that includes the polygamy groups and many other groups. And if you have a Mormon-based background at all, you might be interested in the website sacredgrovesonline.org. There's some interesting information there that we think you'll enjoy. And if you're in a polygamy group and you would like to know how we can help you, you can go to our website, shieldandrefuge.org, that's shieldandrefuge.org. And if you want help in anything, if you have questions, if you want to get out, we can help you do all those things. Just give us a call. We have a toll-free number set up especially for you. It's 877-425-9993. Give us a call. We will give you a biblical perspective on polygamy rather than the Joseph Smith perspective. You know, polygamists will use God, and they do use God, and examples of polygamists in the Bible to justify polygamy. But have you ever compared the Book of Mormon, specifically Jacob chapter 1, verse 15, and Jacob chapter 2, verses 23 and 24, with section 132, verse 1 of the Doctrine and Covenants? In the Book of Mormon, in the verses that I mentioned, God condemns Solomon and David for their wives and concubines. He calls them hard-hearted and wicked practices that they're doing. But you go into section 132, verse 1, and you find that God is justifying Solomon and David specifically because of their wives and concubines. So which is it? Is it a God who changes his mind that wrote these books? Or are they different gods? Did a different God write the Book of Mormon than the one who wrote the Doctrine and Covenants? And they didn't agree, so they got to put in their own opinion in each book. Or was it really no God at all that wrote either book? Tonight's guest is her second time here. She was once in a polygamous relationship following the way of Joseph Smith. And she was our guest on March 25th, and she began to tell us her story, but she wasn't able to finish it. And because we feel that our viewers need to hear the rest of her story, and because we've also had requests that she come back and finish the story, we've invited her back, and she's with us tonight. She is from the AUB, the Apostolic United Brethren, or shall we say the All Red Group, and her experiences getting into polygamy and living and getting out of polygamy are very interesting, and so we're going to finish her story tonight. She was a faithful church member of the LDS Church, but after investigating the fundamentalist doctrine of Mormonism, she and her husband discovered what the original LDS doctrines really were, and so they entered into the polygamous lifestyle. And after checking out different polygamy groups, they decided to join the AUB, and she ultimately discovered that polygamy did not deliver on all its promises. And so I'd like to introduce to you our guest tonight so she can tell the rest of her story, Marisa Vandenbos. Thank you for coming again tonight.
Thank you, Marisa. Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
Yeah, and it's been a while, but you've got a good story to finish telling. So
you
were a polygamous wife in the All Red Group. How long were you married in a polygamous relationship?
4 years.
Four total years?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
In our March show, we got a little bit more than halfway through your story.
Mm-hmm.
So would you mind just kind of very quickly reviewing to bring our viewers up to date of where we left off, and then we could go on and finish the story?
Sure. Like you said, I got married in the church, in the LDS temple, with my husband at the time. And soon after, I don't remember exactly when, but he said to us at one point in our life we would live polygamy, because that was, he learned growing up that was part of the religion and that we would live it someday.
Mm-hmm.
And so I figured it would be in the millennium like everybody else, or years later, but it was about 13 years later, and we had kind of a rocky marriage, but we were at a point where we were finally getting our marriage in a good place. And then he was at church one day and was disagreeing with one of the letters from the First Presidency. And they told him to sit down and shut up or leave. And so he left, and he had pre-recorded a video from the off of channel 7 or 11, probably 11, a program that the AUB had put on.
Mm-hmm.
And so he, sitting home on Sunday one day, decided to watch it. So when I got home from the church, he was excited, felt that Owen had the priesthood, and wanted me to watch it. Took me a little bit more time to decide, but at that time our marriage was still a little bit rocky, and so I thought that maybe polygamy would help.
Okay.
And so we went ahead and I also went off of the church passes out, it gets a pamphlet when you get baptized, with all the questions that you ask.
Mm-hmm.
So I used that as my guide, and I asked all the questions in that little pamphlet, not to baptism, but to, joining the polygamous group. And all the answers were yes. So I thought, well, maybe it is right, and I'm just afraid or something.
Oh, interesting.
So I went ahead, and we joined. And we went to church for about 6 months, and we decided to tell my parents. And we were living with his parents, and so we didn't want to tell him for fear of what eventually did happen anyways. We got kicked out. So we told my parents, and my dad wanted us to see one of the general authorities. So he set up an audience with a general authority, and we went and saw him, and the conversation, I was busy with a baby, and so I didn't hear a lot of it. But when you go through the group, we had gone through and gotten our endowments through the endowment house by then.
But in the polygamy group.
In the polygamy group. Mm-hmm. So we had the...
We had made the transition.
We had made the transition. We had been rebaptized, which is what they believe in also. You can be rebaptized throughout your life. Mm-hmm. Even though you take the sacrament to renew your covenants, you can be rebaptized at any point in your life if you feel like you want to be rebaptized. Mm-hmm. So we were baptized into the group, had gone through the endowment house, received the original long garment that Joseph Smith had. And so this brethren praised us for wearing the long garment. So that kind of made him feel like...
The general authority. The Mormon Church praised you for wearing
the long garment. And which, you know, why wouldn't he? It's the original garment.
But they don't wear them.
No, but they don't wear them. So... So he took that as it was okay, what we were doing.
Oh my, that's interesting.
So we continued to, you know, move on in our life, and things got better. And also because one of the reasons also that I went into it is because he was finally in a place, in a spiritual place that I always wanted him to be in. Mm-hmm. And so I thought, well, this must be right if, you know, he's finally this priesthood leader, this person that I always wanted, you know. Mm-hmm. And so he...
But he didn't have any polygamous wife in mind
no.
when you joined. And
no.
How long did it take him to
It took us about... And actually, she eyed him. He did eye girls and asked for their... to court them.
Did that make you nervous when you knew your husband was courting or looking to court other girls, other women?
Yeah, deep down it did, but I was kind of excited too, because it looks just like, well, I better not bring it up yet, but it looks glamorous. It looks like you have all these friends living with you in your home. It looks like you have a babysitter, an automatic babysitter, if you and your husband want to go on a date, or if you desire to work, or you know, you split up jobs. You know, it looks glamorous that you have a whole bunch of people trying to accomplish the same goal, mm-hmm. rather than you just trying to do it all by yourself. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, and there were women out there that, you know, I liked as well, and I wouldn't mind befriending them as well. In fact, when we got kicked out, his parents finally found out and kicked us out of the home, and we went and lived with a family. And her and I were just kindred spirits. We just loved each other. And when I left the group, her husband asked me to be part of their family.
Oh my goodness.
And it was mainly because she and I got along so well, because his second wife and her did not get along at all. And so,
but still, people can have friendships without marrying the friend.
Yeah,
you know, without their husband marrying their friend.
Yeah, but you know, he thought it. Well, if there's a woman that can get along with my wife, and that appreciates the lifestyle, why not have her in our family?
So, how long did it take before your husband married another woman?
It was, about 4 years.
4 years.
4 years, and then we were married 4 years, because we were in the process of building a home.
That's quite a long time to be in the group before you become polygamous.
Well, they're not so quick to give their hand over the women, especially to newcomers. Mm-hmm. You have to be in the group and be accepted and
kind of probationary.
Yeah, yeah. And unless unless you're a good talker and you walk right in and you know the priesthood brother and like you right away or something, you know, and there are some of those. And so we were kind of standoffish. We didn't get into the main brethren group and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. But
So what happened as he was courting this this girl? You say he had eyes, or she had eyes for him.
She had eyes for him, and she actually asked to be a part of the family.
How old was she?
She was only 14. But she told her mother that she would always be married at 15. So that was her goal. So when she saw him, she wanted to be a part of the family, and she went through the procedure of asking to court, and he said, Owen at the time said, no, it's mm-hmm. you're too young. But she persisted, and then he persisted, and when he found out, of course, this young 14-year-old girl was interested in him, and so they courted and got together, and he finally... Owen said no, so they went and got, because of the legal situation. So he went and made it legal in Las Vegas, married her legally, and then came back to Owen and said, will you seal us? And he said no. In fact, his very,
yeah,
in fact, his very words were, I find it in my notes. He said, oh my, what a heavy cross you've built for yourself.
Mm.
And so even Owen knowing, well...
She was 15 by that.
She was 15, barely. 7 days, 15.
Wow.
And...
How did this sit with you, him marrying that young of a girl?
It wasn't easy. It wasn't comfortable. In fact, I was pregnant at the time with our fifth child. And so I was emotional anyway, to begin with. But there was one night where I kind of had a minor nervous breakdown. I just broke out crying, and I couldn't stop for a good half hour until mm-hmm. I finally realized what was happening and thought, I got to mm-hmm. control myself. Yeah. And it was very, very difficult. And when he got home, I broke down again.
Mm-hmm.
As I mentioned earlier to you, he felt like he was cheating on me. So it's not normal for a man to, want another wife or have another wife. They feel guilty. They feel like they're cheating on you. So to justify that action, he would not give me the attention that I needed.
So
he would ignore me
guilt.
And my needs. To justify what he was doing in courting this other woman.
Okay, so there was neglect for you
uh-huh.
and more attention given
and
to
more
her, which makes
her.
Your situation even worse.
Oh, yeah.
Your emotional
yes,
situation
of course,
even worse.
Of course. And so it was quite difficult. And
how did you and her get along? Did you manage to,
Yeah, we did. Well, she could have been my daughter.
Yeah.
Even though we were married about the same time as her parents were, but we waited 5 years to have a child,
mm-hmm.
and so but she was born within the time frame that we could have had a child. So
were
it was like having no, but they believed in it. They were in, but he never took on another wife.
Okay,
and so, but anyway, to move forward here. After 3 years of somewhat, a polygamy life, and she had a baby, and then I was totally neglected.
Mm-hmm.
And he ran a business, and she was... I had my kids to take care of, of course, and she didn't really, through that three-year period, she didn't have any children to take care of. So she was always with him, helping with his business, and, they had a lot in common.
So she wasn't home helping you, like the promise of polygamy seemed
yeah.
to you to, it didn't work
I
out
was,
at all.
I was the maid, and she was the little playmate. As you might say, and he spent most of his time
and
with her.
And that's not unusual, Marisa,
no, it's
polygamous
not.
Marriages. It's not unusual at all.
Yeah. And in fact, the last year, I don't think we slept together one night. Mm. We weren't together one night.
So what made you decide to break out? Just things moving together and just kind of piling upon each other? Was there one event that caused you to decide to?
Well, there was a few things piling up. Number one, he became abusive again towards me.
Physically, verbally,
of course, neglect, you know, is a form of
abuse. That's built in, isn't it, with polygamy?
And so, you know, I got all forms. And then there was an incident where we didn't have a shower in the home, so we showered in our greenhouse. It was a covered greenhouse. It was milky, so no one could see. And we had kind of a little tiki shower room in there, and it was solar. Mm-hmm. And so we would go out in this little tiki room and shower, because we lived very natural, you might say. And so she wanted to take a shower. It was 4 o'clock in the afternoon when the water was hot, and they were out there in the tiki room enjoying the heat and the mist. And he said, well, go ahead. And I just stood there, and she says, well, no, you need to leave. He says, well, you can shower. You're my daughter. She was 12.
Oh, my goodness.
Or 13 at the time.
Oh, mercy.
And she said, no. And I had taught her to be a very independent person from day one. I thought, I'm going to teach this one to be independent. And he says, well, I'm your father, for heaven's sakes. And she goes, well, no, I'm not going to shower in
Good
front
for
of
her.
You. And he said, well, just wear a swimming suit on and wash yourself. And she said, no, I'm not going to. And so it was at that was one of the points that I just thought, oh, this is getting ridiculous. Mm-hmm. You know, mm-hmm. And I didn't say a word. I wasn't going to stand up for her because she was standing up for herself. I just stood back and was watching, you know. And then my other daughter, who was about 10 at the time, and she didn't tell me this until later on after we got out. She said that whenever her dad would hug me or give me a kiss or show affection towards me, she would see the other wife get very jealous and have this angry look on her face.
Whoa.
And that made her angry because that was her mom. She had every right to hug her dad, you know?
Yes.
And so that was upsetting to her.
Mm-hmm.
See this going
on in the kids and in the family, you decided that maybe it wasn't something you wanted to stick around and be a part of anymore.
And I was abused very badly one night. Mm. And so that's when I decided I was going. And in fact, when we met, it's interesting because when we met with the apostle, when we left, he put his hand on my shoulder and said, if you ever need to talk, you are welcome back. So I went back to him. I called at this point where I had decided that I was leaving. And up until then, you know, I mentioned that, you know, in the Bible and in the scriptures, it talks about an altar, that you pray to an altar. You hear many stories where they go to altars and pray and offer up and all that.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they believe in building altars and having them in your home. So I even was so desperate that I pulled our altar out of its little cubby hole one day when nobody was there. They were all gone on a walk or gone somewhere, I don't know. And pulled the altar out, put my temple robes on, and prayed at the altar, begging God to help me to know what to do.
So you were in deep distress.
I was in deep, very deep distress. And I would go out in the fields because there was like nothing between our house and for about a mile to the mountains. And I would just go out in the sagebrush and just pray and, you know, help me to know what to do. And so it was, I was really upset at this point. And so I met with this brethren, and of course I had met with some friends, my ex-bishop. I had talk to my when I went to meet with this brethren, he didn't tell me to leave him, but he said, "Oh, we need to do something about these children."
Yeah.
And then I knew, mm-hmm. you know, I had to get my kids out of there. That wasn't a healthy situation for them.
Good for you. There's a lot of women that leave simply because of their concern for their children. Mm-hmm. And then some who don't, which is sad.
Well, and the reason I didn't leave for so long is I had made a temple covenant. Mm-hmm. Then we were into the polygamous group that was even a higher law.
Mm-hmm.
Even more commitment. Yeah. Even more commitment. And, you know, I couldn't justify leaving, you know, because I just felt like I'd made this promise, and how do I get out of it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so...
Were you afraid of shunning? Were you afraid? There are many reasons that people won't leave a polygamy situation. I've talked to many a woman that will say this. The reason they won't leave is because they are afraid of shunning, losing their family, and of going to hell. Were those any of your issues?
No. No, because by then I had decided that it wasn't right and that polygamy wasn't right.
So you weren't afraid of any shunning by anybody?
I knew that my family, my siblings and my father would welcome me.
Well, they weren't in the group.
Because they were so shunning, And we weren't really, we lived far out of the group. Mm-hmm. So we weren't really in the group too much. We were just kind of all by ourselves out there. And we, in fact, there was a time where we went to the Manti group looking mm-hmm. for a wife. We went down to Colorado City and visited their church and decided that wasn't where we wanted to be because they told you who to marry and when mm-hmm. to marry.
Right.
And he didn't, this is a man in control. He doesn't want to be told who to marry and, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
And I didn't want that for my daughters.
Sure.
I didn't want my daughter to be told, okay, that's the man you have to marry. I didn't think that was right, whether she was in love with him or not. Mm-hmm. I didn't want that for my children.
Mm-hmm.
And so I didn't want to do those group those.
So did you tell your husband that you were going to be leaving? How did he take it? You just left without telling him?
But... Oh yeah, he. In fact, there was one night where he beat me, and we went for a walk, and I was in excruciating pain, and he said, "What are you doing?" Well, in my mind, I'm saying, I'm leaving you.
Yeah.
But outwardly, I'm saying, I don't know. You know, submissive little
this
wife.
This is where I wanted you to
yeah,
be.
Yeah, yeah. I knew how to manipulate him at this point, you know, and I just said, I don't know, you know. But in my heart, I knew I was leaving because he said, because if you go, you are not taking the kids with you.
Mm-hmm.
And so
the
I couldn't
ultimate
go.
Threat. Yeah.
I could not go and tell him, well, I'm leaving you. Without a fight for the kids.
Right.
And so what had happened, down to the exact thing, how I got out was, I went to Salt Lake to visit this brethren, and it was then I decided. So, but I wasn't going to leave for like 2 weeks later because I had to get, we were house sitting for a lady in the neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
And... or cat sitting, whatever. My daughter was doing it. So I felt like I had an obligation there. Well, I had a dear friend that lived in Mount Pleasant with me, and she had set up an appointment with a women's advocate where I could write the story down of everything that had happened, you know, especially this brutal beating.
Mm-hmm.
But this was like 6 months after the because had I left that night, had I called my dad, I think my dad and my brother would have come down there and probably killed the man if they had walked in the room and saw me.
Yeah.
So it wasn't until like 6 months later. And besides that, you still have to work that through,
mm-hmm.
how to leave and what to do.
And how to leave with your children without the fear of him finding out and keeping them from leaving with
And especially him because he never left.
Yeah.
He worked at home. He was always at home. He didn't have a job where he got up in the morning and went to work and then came home. So when do I leave? And we only had one car.
Yeah.
And so...
You had some working out to do there, didn't you?
Yeah, I did. And so this... I filled out some papers to have... To be... what is it when... I can't think of what it is.
Restraining order?
Restraining order, yeah. To have a restraining order. So the lady said, okay, should I turn this in now? And I said, no, just wait, you know. I'm not ready just yet. So, but as I went home, and when I had come home from visiting the elder in the church, I asked him, I said, are you planning on going anywhere? Are you planning on doing anything or going any place? No, no. Do you have any soccer games you need to ref? No. You know, he had nothing. He was not going anywhere. And I thought, great, what am I going to do? You know? So, but I went home that day after filling out those papers, and he was looking for me, and he met me about halfway and said, where have you been? And I said, I told you I was having lunch with, you know, my friend. And he says, well, I have a soccer game I have to go ref in Manti, or Ephraim. I think it was Ephraim. But that's quite a ways away.
Yeah.
So I said, okay, well, drop me off at this house where, you know, I was sitting at. And I did what I needed to do there, and I called my friend, and I said, he's gone. He's
now
gone to Ephraim.
Time to go.
She said, there's your window.
Yep.
There's your window.
Yep.
And I said... Okay, yeah. You know, yeah. I was nervous,
yes,
because you
absolutely.
Don't know.
Oh, I know how scary
I don't
is,
know
believe
how,
me.
You didn't know how it was going to happen.
Yeah.
So I said, okay, and she says, I'll be over there in a few minutes. So she came and got me, and I went up to my kids, and I gave them all a popsicle and put them in their room. His other wife was in their bedroom. And I said to the children, I said, you know how Daddy treats me? And they said, yeah. I said, well, I'm not going to live here with him anymore. I said, and it's, you guys can come with me, or you can stay here with your dad. It's up to you. But I'm going. And that was like 3 days after I got home from visiting the elder. And I told my dad, and so he was prepared to bring me to his home, but mm-hmm. not for 2 weeks.
Yeah.
And of course, they wanted to go. You know, and
good.
I had prepared, I had come home and I'd done wash and put the baby's clothes, you know, the three youngest clothes mm-hmm. away and made a list of exactly what I wanted to take. And so my friend came over with her truck and we proceeded to pack up the things that I had planned. And I told the kids, go get whatever you want to take, put it in your little sleeping bags, because they had sleeping bags for blankets. Put anything you want to take, your clothes, your toys, whatever you want, put it in that sleeping bag and take it out and put it in the truck. So that's what they did. And I told my friend, I said, okay, I want that, 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 and that. And she's like, okay. So, which wasn't very much, mm-hmm. you know. And so, and I had even gone into the bedroom and categorized the clothes that I wanted to take. So I walked in their bedroom, which was where my clothes were, because there wasn't a closet in the bedroom that I stayed in. And by then, the other wife had figured out what was going on. She saw the kind of commotion and looked out the window and saw we were loading up the truck. And I walked in the room and she said, you can't do that. Where are you going? I said, I'm leaving. She goes, you can't do that. I said, oh, yes, I can. She says, who told you to do that? I said, my Heavenly Father. She says, well, you can't do that. Johann loves you. And I said, not enough.
Mm.
And I took the clothes and walked out. And I walked in and she was fumbling through the phone book. And she says, what are you doing? She goes, I'm going to call him. I says, you can't. He's on the soccer field somewhere. You're not going to find him. So we packed up, got in the truck. And the kids were scared. My one daughter even said,
yeah,
well, what will
scary.
Happen? What will happen,
it's
Mom?
Scary.
She was afraid of her dad, of
yeah.
what he might do. So we proceeded to go to my house in Salt Lake, which took about an hour and a half to 2 hours. And he knew exactly. When he got home, she was upset, and of course. And
mm-hmm.
he called me as soon as I walked in the door, practically.
Yeah. Oh,
and,
yeah. I'm sure. So we need to open up the phone lines now.
Okay.
And we'll continue. We've got phone calls coming in already. So we will take phone calls now. And I'm asking our viewers to please stay on topic when you call in, out of respect for our guest. If you have comments or questions that you have for her or even for myself regarding our polygamist experiences, please call 801-973-8820. And you can ask Marisa almost any question regarding what we've been talking about. Right now we have a couple of calls waiting. We have Douglas from Salt Lake City calling. Hello, Douglas.
Hey, how are you tonight?
Hello, very good, thank you. You're on the air.
My mother was an Arawak from Delta and Ephraim areas of southern Utah. I was always aware as growing up in the church that polygamy was something that first Joseph Smith's wife, Emma, was opposed to. He had many, many, many wives that his wife, Emma, was never aware of.
That's true.
And I also know that, you know, that most, at least a lot of people in the church, were not expected to live in polygamy. It wasn't something that everyone did.
Well,
polygamy was something that was, you know, for certain people.
Well, that is not the
chosen people.
That isn't the case, Douglas. That's what they say, but that isn't the case. And really,
that isn't the case.
No, that wasn't the case at the time that they started polygamy. But Douglas, that's kind of off topic. We would really like to address Marisa's story tonight. And if you had any questions or comments about her story,
but, you know, I was always aware as a growing up. Then my mother, being an Arawak, and being from a family that lived in polygamy, that there were problems.
There's always problems.
Was not someone who practiced polygamy with the approval of his wife, Emma.
That's true.
So I feel bad for any of those, like this young lady tonight, mm-hmm. that had lived in polygamy and could see the harm and the suffering that not only the wives but the children were having.
That's true, Douglas. Polygamy does not make for stable emotional health mm-hmm. in families. And thank you for your call.
It really doesn't.
No. Okay. Thanks, Douglas, for calling.
Thank you for giving me the opportunity, and God bless all of you.
Thank you. Good night. Okay. We have Jennifer, line 2 in Camas. Hello, Jennifer.
Yes. Hi, Doris. I really, really enjoy your program.
Thank you.
I wondered if you have heard of something that I was recently asked about. I'm 56 years old, have never been married. I do not have children. I was raised in the LDS philosophy. A younger gentleman approached me and asked me if I would think about marrying him to stay home and take care of my sister wife's children while they went to work, and I could basically be a live-at-home grandmother. Huh. And I was wondering if either one of you had heard of anything like this. I'll hang up and listen to what you have to say.
Thank you, Jennifer. Well, have you heard of this kind of marriage proposal?
No.
Opportunity or opportunist, whichever it might be.
But you know, that's the way you look at it. If he's going to manipulate her in a way where he knows that she's going to feel comfortable in a lifestyle, he's not going to offer to join the family and go to work and help support. He knows that maybe she hasn't had the opportunity to have children. And so he's going to give her that opportunity to be a mother, to be a part of the children's life. Yeah, and to mm-hmm. be a grandma. And sure, that's going to help, because that means he can send a couple of younger wives out to work in the field.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so, you know.
And I've seen the opposite happen, too. In fact, I received a call from a gentleman quite some time ago. and he wanted to know how to answer his wife because she wanted him to take another wife so she could go out and work. Mm-hmm. She wanted a babysitter, and she thought him having a second wife would be the perfect solution.
Yeah.
You know? And I said, well, the first time he goes to bed with her, you're going to go nuts. So I'm not, so I think I'd think over this thing twice, you know? But that's what it is. It's just an opportunity.
Yeah.
I think. So Jennifer, I hope that she said no and that you meant it. And, polygamy is just isn't right. Now, and you know, and I need to say here, for you, Marisa, and for our viewers, the main purpose of this program is to let the viewers and the polygamists know God doesn't require it for salvation.
Yeah.
That's what started with Joseph Smith and was propagated with Brigham Young and Wilford Woodruff and John Taylor and the Kingstons and the Barlows and the Allreds, and all of them say you've got to live polygamy in order to please God and go to heaven. And that's a lie. It isn't true. And that's the main purpose of our show, is to bring the truth of God to bear on this whole question of polygamy. Plus, it's against the law.
You know, and that's why it's so hard to leave, because that's drilled into you. I mean, you'll be damned if you live that lifestyle.
Right.
And so you don't want to be damned, so you live it and think that that's
the way you're pleasing
God. The
way
you're supposed to.
And it has nothing to do with God.
And you wanted me to read that one comment in here. It says,
now, this is your journal.
This is my journal that I had written. It was back in 1995, and it says, so far this kind of life is not agreeing with me. I love Becky very much, but I am sad to say I'm not very happy. I guess I've got a lot of growing to do. I hope someday it will be different, and I will be happy.
So the promises that polygamy offered you when you were investigating never came true.
No.
They never happened.
No.
It didn't happen. Okay, good. Thank you. An off-air question, Mary from Salt Lake City. How did it make you feel when he had the other wife? I think you just answered that.
Yeah,
didn't you?
I felt very upset a lot. There were times where it was good and we had a good time together and we'd have dinner together, but the majority of the time it was heartaching. It hurt. And one of the reasons that I did join also is because I felt, because he was so controlling to me in the first part of our marriage, that maybe if he had another wife to dawdle over, I could have more freedom to do what I wanted to do as a person. And so and I did. I had a lot more time for myself, but
was there inner peace?
But,
though?
But there
did
was
you
no
give
inner
something
peace.
Up for
yeah,
that?
Because I didn't have the attention from him anymore either.
That you need.
That I needed.
Yes.
So.
Mm-hmm. Good.
15 minutes. Please.
Okay, we have Leah from West Valley City. Hello, Leah.
Yes.
You're on the air.
Hello, thanks for asking Marissa a question. She said that she raised her 12-year-old daughter to be independent, and she really emphasized that. And so I was wondering, did she feel like that she had not been raised to be an independent woman, and that is why she, in the first place, got involved with a man who was so controlling and who had such a hard time breaking away from everything, who was, you know, the reason why she got drawn into everything, all the polygamy and so forth.
No.
How important is raising your daughters to be independent? How important is that to keep them from sex relationships?
I was raised to be independent. My mother was very independent. But I could see that by the time we had her, I was somewhat controlled by my husband. There had been a lot of heartache. He had controlled many situations with my family life. And so I wanted her to be an independent person so that she would not maybe get into a situation in a controlling marriage that I was in. Even though I wasn't independent, or I was raised very independent, I myself allowed this man to control and take that away.
Thank you.
Okay, thanks for calling, Leah. Okay, Ricky from Bantai calling. Hello, Ricky.
Hi, how you doing?
Pretty good. You're on the air. What's your question?
Hey, I just first-time caller, big-time fan. Just wondering, I had a question concerning the show Big Love, and was just wondering how that portrayal is of how modern-day polygamy actually is.
Well, Ricky, we wanted to take some time tonight, if we had the time to do it, and discuss Sister Wives, this new show that's come up, and Big Love. So it kind of fits in with probably we're not going to have much time to do it, but this gives us an opportunity to talk. Is Big Love reality?
No. Not from what I saw, no. Definitely not.
I haven't seen anything. It's more glamorized. They've got a lot of true-to-life doctrine that they have interwoven into the Big Love script, but they've made it more glamorous. They've made it much, much better than the real-life polygamy life is.
Most wives...
Can I tell you how impressed I am with Marissa and the courage and fortitude that she showed leaving that situation? It's just tremendous.
Thank you.
It does take courage, Ricky. It takes a lot of courage, and sometimes to the point of desperation for someone to leave.
You guys are doing great work. Keep it up. I just love it. I'm a big fan.
Thank you.
Bye.
Thanks for calling. We like those kinds of calls. Okay, Mark from Orem. Hello, Mark.
Yeah, hi. How are you doing?
We're doing well, thank you. You're on the air.
Good. Hey, thank you. Hey, I got a question. I actually like to hear your opinion on something. There's a new program on TV about a polygamous family, and the Lehigh Police Department is trying to prosecute them. And I watched the show a couple of times. I don't agree with it. I just wonder what your opinion. I was wondering if I could take that off the air.
Okay. We'll let you. You bet. Thank you. Well, we're going to be forced to talk about it, aren't we?
Yes, we are, aren't we? and that's okay.
And, of course, we do invite, we don't have a lot of time to talk about it, but we do invite any polygamist or ex-polygamist that may be watching the show tonight to weigh in on your opinion of it as well as we very briefly discuss what we think. And if you're afraid to call in, afraid you'll be recognized, just use an alias or anonymous and weigh in on what you think about Sister Wives. Is it really reality?
No. It's the glamorized part of it. But I'm sure when the camera goes off, there is contention. However, last week's show was the heartache came out more. But you can see how hard it is, how it hurts to share a man. They're doing it because the same reason any of us do it. It's what we're told that we need to do.
And so they're not bringing the religion out a lot in that. And yet basically that's what they say to get people into the polygamy groups is it's God's will.
Yeah.
But not all of them are as religiously oriented with it as others.
Yeah.
And this program isn't bringing out hardly any of the religion.
But you can still see the pain. You can even see the pain in his eyes when his wives are talking. If you watch that, because I've watched him. Mm-hmm. And when they are talking about how it hurts them to see him go with somebody else or on a date or anything, you can see in his eyes that he is hurting. But he still will continue to do it
because he's taken number four.
And he's got all these wives that are going to follow him to the ends of the world.
And we talked about, they have beautiful clothes, beautiful hair, beautiful makeup, beautiful home, cooperative children, loving family. I mean, everything at least in the first show, everything looked so put together.
And in some homes, that is the way it is.
But not a typical polygamous home.
Many of the wives are thrown into a garage And they're lucky if they see their husband bring them groceries once in a while. There's a lot of desolate, desolate
yes,
women out there.
Yes, that's a good word.
That are just living in shacks or trailers or garages, defending for themselves.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so, and making for themselves. Yeah. And I know a lot of women. I know a lot of women who are required to have a baby a year and work two jobs. They have to support themselves. Mm-hmm. And their husband won't support them, won't even buy them a meal.
Yeah.
Won't buy their children's clothes, won't do any of those things. They don't get to wear the beautiful clothes and the beautiful makeup and the beautiful home at all. They have to beg just to have a hole in the floor fixed.
Well, we lived very, very poorly too. You know, he couldn't afford to support me. And my, I was 3 weeks pregnant when I left him. And so that made number six. And he now has six with her, and he can't afford them.
No, he can't.
He can't.
And then another, a good book that I would recommend, it's called His Favorite Wife by Susan Schmidt. She's written about, she was the sixth wife of Verlin LeBaron, and talk about poverty. If you want to read poverty in a polygamous situation, read that book. It's called His Favorite Wife. By Susan Schmidt. Now, we have an off-the-air question, anonymous. How did Maurice's husband control her? What did he do to control her?
Well, like a point that comes out in my mind right now, I had friends there and I would go on daily walks with them. Well, he finally was worried that I was telling them stories about the abuse or whatever, and so, or anything controlling, anything that he didn't want them to hear about. So he finally just said, you know what, you can't walk with them anymore. You can't go out and walk with them. As far as the physical abuse, it wasn't a reoccurring or a something that happened all the time. It seemed like it happened like in October of every year. For the three or four years that we were married in polygamy. We'd get in an argument, and because of my independence, I would stand for myself, you know, and he didn't like that. And so, you know, he'd smack me or whatever, you know. And I had to just obey him, and he would be firm in telling me what I had or could or couldn't do. I didn't have a car, so I couldn't go very many places. We had a car that we shared, and I could go to the grocery store and things like that. You know, I didn't bother asking to do a whole lot for fear that what would happen.
I'd like to make a mention right here, Marisa, and for our viewers, especially anyone in polygamy or anyone who has or is being abused. If you stay with your abuser, you are giving him permission to continue to abuse you. Get out and stay out and don't go back, because if you go back, you're giving him permission all over again to abuse you.
Even
That's
more.
That's exactly right, even more. And it usually does get worse. It doesn't get better without help. So going back or staying in the situation will not change. It'll make it worse.
And when I left, I got questions, are you going to go back to him? And I said, no, why would I do that? I left. But it is common, the average number for women to go back to their husbands is seven times.
And it's the fear, the brainwashing, and again, it's the spiritual thing.
Well,
you know,
yeah, and they get out, and where do they go?
Yeah.
What do they do? How do they support their family?
That's what we want to do in this ministry, is help them get out and stay out by supplying the needs that they have. Off the air question, David from Salt Lake, is Marisa a practicing Mormon now or what? You're searching, right?
Well, I came back. I went back to the church. When I left, I came back to the church because that's where I felt I needed to be. Since then, I've gone inactive. I'm not sure right now. So that's where I stand.
Okay, we have Ruth from Moab on line two. Hello, Ruth.
Yes.
Yes, you're on the air, Ruth.
Okay, I just heard a comment about that you went back to church and then you became inactive. See, I have been associated with the church for more than 20 years, and I just want to give you encouragement to continue to search. The very core within the LDS Church is eternal progression, which means polygamy to the LDS people is a holy order of heaven. So it's already embedded
right
in every LDS person that it's a holy order. So I want to give you encouragement and thanks for being courageous enough to get out of the situation. But in actuality, my dear, it is Mormon doctrine that polygamy is one of the core beliefs.
Right.
So I would encourage you to continue to seek.
That's true, Ruth. Thank you. Thank you very much. And that's true. It is Mormon doctrine. Well, we're getting to the end of the show, and we got in a lot of what we wanted to talk about, but not everything. And I want to thank you. You being willing to come and tell your story is important. It's helping someone else perhaps either have the courage to leave or have the good sense not to join to start with. And I'd like to have my closing comments tonight to talk about God created marriage. What he had in mind was for a husband to love and to adore his wife. He had in mind for the man to provide for her and to have eyes for her and for her exclusively. God did not model marriage to be anything but monogamy. The first marriage was monogamy, one for one. The second wife of Brigham Young once said this: God will be very cruel if he does not give us poor women adequate compensation for the trials that we have endured in polygamy. The poor woman didn't know that God did not come up with polygamy. It was man who did that. And Jesus met the Samaritan woman 2,000 years ago at the well. She had been married 5 times, and she had given up completely of the hope of having a happy marriage. And Jesus met her at the well because he came to seek and to save the lost. He came to heal the brokenhearted, and she was brokenhearted, and she was deeply moved that Jesus would even speak to her. And he did, and he spoke to her, and he accepted her despite her questionable past. He didn't condemn her, and she accepted who he was, the Messiah, the God himself, the Savior, the only Savior that she needed. And it's the Savior who saves us, nothing and no one else. It's Jesus alone who saves us. And salvation is not resurrection. Salvation is uninterrupted eternity with Jesus Christ, with God himself, forever and ever. Jesus died on the cross for our sins so that we could have a grand entrance into that eternal glory. The Samaritan woman believed and accepted Jesus, and then she ran into town and excitedly told everyone else about him. That's what we do, and we hope that you will do the same. Good night.
This has been the audio podcast edition of Polygamy, What Love Is This? This program is a production of A Shield and Refuge Ministry and Main Street Church of Brigham City. You can view current and past video episodes as well as download audio episodes of this program at whatloveisthis.tv. If you or someone you know is in need of assistance in leaving a polygamous situation, please contact us. We are here to help. All of our contact information can be found at shieldandrefuge.org or call us at 877-425-9993. If you have any questions or comments about this or any of our other programs, we'd love to hear from you. Write us at email@whatloveisthis.tv. Thanks for listening, and we hope you'll join us again.